I'm so glad to see everybody out this morning for Pat Sheehan's session on transportation. Pat is on the board of directors with the... In a minute, yeah. I'm sorry. Actually, Lynn is reminding me that she needs to make a quick announcement, and then I'll do Pat's announcement. All right, here we go.
Very good. Thank you, Barbara. We had a little auction last night, and we made some money. Here's the breakdown. For Ohio, ACBO took in $428. The Columbus chapter took in $179. The Greater Cincinnati was $102. And the Cleveland chapter was $112 for a total of $828. For Indiana, however, it's very different. ACBI took in $536. The Circle City chapter took in $565. Heartland took in $172. And SCAVI was $438 for a total of $1705. So the total auction take was $25.26, plus we received $27 in donations, which will be split between the two states. So fantastic. We did well, folks.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic, fantastic. Okay, thanks, Lynn. Okay, Pat Sheehan is from Maryland, and he is on the board of directors for the American Council of the Blind. He also is on the National Transportation Committee with ACB. And I used to be on this committee with Pat. He's very knowledgeable about transportation. They've done some very neat things with the Maryland, D.C. kind of metro transit company that I would love to do in Bloomington. And I don't have his full bio, and I know it's extensive, and I apologize, Pat, but let me give you Pat Sheehan, and I thank you so much for coming to our convention from Maryland. All right.
Thank you so much. Thanks to you guys for coming out on a Sunday morning. Last session, you guys are stalwarts, and I do appreciate that. So a little bit about me. I work for Department of Veterans Affairs. I've been doing Section 508 work since 2000. I've been in the federal government for over 40 years. And like you've heard last night from folks that work at Department of Veterans Affairs, an excellent place to work. It's a privilege to work for the veterans. It's a privilege to work for an agency that has such a wonderful mission. And so a little bit about my background there. The other thing I think that's it's good for you guys to know, as a member of the board of directors, my job, as I see it, is to serve you guys. You guys are my bosses. You guys give us direction. We're there to make progress on your behalf. With respect to Ohio, I am Ohio's board liaison, so I expect Jill Noble to boss me around and tell me what to do. So I am very pleased, actually, to be Ohio's board liaison. My job there would be to do whatever you need, answer your questions, do research, attend board meetings, whatever your president decides she can use a board liaison for, that's what I'm here for. So I'm real pleased to be here today. I want to thank Indiana and Ohio. I have had a wonderful time here at this convention. You guys made me feel very welcome. I got a chance to sit down and talk with a bunch of people that I never would have met. So kudos to the groups here, to ACB Indiana and Ohio, for the wonderful work that you've done. I also want to say thank you so much just to everyone in this room and to the two groups for the work that you've done for ACB, particularly in the area of transportation. And I'm going to combine a little bit of environmental access because I'm also on that committee to talk about the work that we've done, the accomplishments that we've made. And all too often, I think, and I hear it also in ACB, we always want more, we want more, we want more involvement, we want more this, we want more that. What I really want to leave you with today is thank you. I want to talk to you about what we have done, what we have accomplished as an organization, what you guys have accomplished because you've talked to us, you've talked to committees, you've talked to transportation people, you've talked to people about sidewalk, intersection design, all that kind of stuff. And because of that, we have made tremendous progress, and we have a lot more work to do. I'll talk a little bit about that as we go. Maybe I'll reference a little bit of what goes on in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, because that's the area that I'm mostly familiar with. If you guys have questions, if you want to just yell them out, that would be great, because I'd love to be able to address the discussion towards things that you want to know. One of the things that has come up, and Peter actually brought it up in a couple of his discussions, talked about autonomous vehicles. And that is an area that ACB Transportation Committee really has not gotten involved in. It's been an area that Tony Stevens, particularly, Eric Bridges specifically, have been involved in meetings that deal with autonomous vehicles. They've been working with Tesla. They've been working with GM. They've been working with Uber. They've been working with Lyft. And they keep saying the accessibility pieces of that, of what's coming, are going to be great. Well, I don't know about you, but I want to know exactly what they're talking about, the nuts and bolts of when you say accessibility in a vehicle. What are we talking about? Give me the geeky stuff, you know, all the tech stuff. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And it's nothing that we've done any work with on the Transportation Committee, but I think it's an area that we do want to get involved in. So I went to, with the Board of Directors last year, went to a company in Maryland called Local Motors. And so I'll describe to you sort of the experience of walking on a van, and what we were able to see as far as the accessibility. And this is the level of accessibility that I think they're looking to put in vehicles, particularly if you're looking at vans, vehicles for paratransit, that sort of thing. So before, as you walk into the van, you have a smart card. And in that smart card, they will it'll register your disability or what your needs are. So in my particular case, it registered that I'm blind. So as I would walk into the van, it would activate. The first thing that I would want to do would be to find out where there are empty seats. And so what we do now is kind of walk there and touch and see if the seat's empty, whatever. In the new vehicles, they might have they would have technology, and they demonstrated this, where if you walk past a seat that is empty or that's filled, you would feel that you would have a closed door in front of you. You wouldn't be able to walk into that seat because you'd feel going past that seat is not open. As you walk past, let's say, the second seat, or you're walking beside the bench along the side, you would feel that there's an opening there, so that then you could sit in that particular seat. So you would know, as a sighted person knows, who gets in there and just looks and says, oh, there's a vacant seat, where the vacant seats are. That is pretty cool. I had never seen that kind of technology demonstrated before. It's a little bit eerie. It's a little bit scary. You know, it's using haptics, but it's very, very interesting. So then, as a blind person, I sit in the seat. The vehicle knows that I'm blind. And so for me, what I want to know is, what am I passing? What my stop is going to be, X stop, let's say. And so there's a microphone that is situated in the van, and it's going to announce, but it will announce only to me what my stops are. And so the rest of the vehicle is not going to be annoyed with the vehicle announcements. It's going to be just directed towards me because it knows where I'm sitting. That is pretty cool stuff. Now,
how does that work? I mean, how would that work exactly?
No, it would just announce to you, so that the hearing area that you, the directional area of the speaker is directed only to you, not to the seats to your left or right, just focused right to you. I had never seen that before either. So I was really impressed that it's just going to speak to you and you're the only one that's going to hear it. And then as you know, it would announce the stops, and then as you would get off, it would tell you where you are with respect to being close to the door, you know, to the front doors, to the left or the right or whatever. They're also looking to collaborate with Ira so that as you leave the vehicle, Ira could pick up and then it could help you navigate in the building. Now, so it can recognize the disability, your disability. Suppose, and this was kind of another thing that was interesting, suppose you had someone who had dementia or Alzheimer's. They would get on the vehicle. The vehicle could then tell them, you know, that they're in front of their stop. It would also then tell them that, oh, by the way, you have an appointment. The room you need to go to is on the second floor, room 215, because it has that appointment in its database. So the individual would, you know, that have that in their memory. And, oh, by the way, it would remind them that, you brought a cap on board or you brought an umbrella on board. Don't forget to pick up your umbrella or cap. Yeah. That would be on the smart card. That would be on the smart card.
You would report it,
and this is, you know, this isn't in production right now, but what they showed us was you would report it on your smart card. So as you get on the vehicle knows all of this stuff about you.
You personally report it.
So it would be, yeah. So depending upon your disability, this particular vehicle is going to intelligently get you from point A to point B. And then based on your disability, you know, if you're deaf, you have one set of needs. If you had, if you've got issues with dementia, let's say, you'd have another set of needs. If you're blind, you'd have another set of needs. Those are the kinds of accessibility areas that they're looking in right now. I think it's very exciting. Those are pretty cool. The other thing that was kind of cool at Local Motors was they were showing the car from Fast and Furious 3, and they had actually printed that car for the movie. So they had a 3D printer. It took 72 hours to print that car. Can you imagine them? And they're saying that the process for printing cars is getting faster and faster. Can you imagine printing your own car from a 3D printer? Amazing stuff, just amazing. So, yeah. Unbelievable. So a lot of exciting stuff going on. The Transportation Committee, ACB's Transportation Committee, is not so much involved in that area right now. I think it's an area that we would want to be involved in. But I know there are lots of technological issues going on with the vehicles. The accessibility is being built in. We have some good people who have been involved so that you have consistent requirements going into the process, which is great. But, you know, I'd love to see some of that work get down to the Transportation Committee level so we could do some of the nuts and bolts of some of that work. I know that, and I don't know if you guys have read your in leadership that Tony Stevens is leaving. So there's a huge hole that has to be filled with respect to that. And Tony has done such wonderful work, particularly in the area of transportation and all that. So we'll have big shoes to fill as far as Tony's replacement is concerned, but that work will go on. And I am very excited about the whole autonomous vehicle area and what's going forward.
Questions.
Yeah, go ahead. Shout them out. Oh, yes. Thank you for that. See, that's what happens when you're going from one transportation system to another. And we switched from paper cards about 4 years ago because we had so many people that were selling cards, these cards, you know, for a particular fee. We had a lot of, I think when it comes to Washington, D.C., we have more smart people that know how to get around and make money on these things like smart cards and, on these things like cards. What's that?
I've got one on me. I'm going to pass around so they can see it.
Yeah. In Washington, D.C., we have smart cards. Those smart cards are available. They will get you onto the bus, onto the subway and also onto the paratransit system. So it's the size of a credit card. You load cash onto that smart card. And so that when you get on the bus, you just tap it on the reader. It deducts the money that you need. So and it'll also it's also set up so that if you have it tied to your checking account and it gets down to a certain level, it'll deduct money from your checking account to put that the money on the smart card. Also in Washington D.C., because we have transit benefits, we have the transit benefits sent directly to that smart card. So that smart card is pretty cool. Now, and I'll jump a little bit into the paratransit system that we have in Washington, D.C., because they did a nice job. We're very lucky. Well, it's not so much. It's not luck so much because a lot of – yes. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Because as I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking about advocacy with your transit company mm-hmm. to try to get something like that
yes.
executed. I wonder what the investment is for the transit company to be able to do a smart card kind of payment.
It actually saves them money over the long haul.
I guess the investment to get the system up and going, would there be some?
There would be some, yeah. There would be some investment in that to get smart cards, but you're able to. It's going to give you a lot more information. You're able to track to see, according to smart card data, because it gets downloaded from the machines to their database, so they know where people are going, what trains they're using, what buses they're using, what the travel pattern is. You don't get any of that when you've got the paper cards. And so being able to have access to all of that data is huge. And of course, that's what one of the things that the transit property is all about is data and what they're going to do with the data, how they're going to use that data and tracking to see where the bottlenecks are, where they might need help. Do they need more help on the bus end? Do they need more help on the, on the train or the subway end? What is the, you know, the cards also help you track when where your peak times are. You know, who's riding when. What's that?
I think Indianapolis is going to that in like 2 years.
What, smart cards? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also, for the longest time, we didn't have smart card technology able to be used on the paratransit system. But now we do have that. So the paratransit cards that so the smart cards are also able to be accepted on our paratransit system, and so that's huge. They even put Braille on the smart cards, so that you can read what your smart card is as opposed to some other card that you have in your wallet or purse or something like that. So yeah. Go ahead.
I live in Cincinnati. Our Greater Cincinnati chapter, we reimburse people on their paratransit
mm-hmm.
and taxi service and things like that. Like you turn in your receipt, you get half of what you
get. Really?
How could we make that work on those?
Smart cards? So I think you go back one step and ask the question why they're reimbursing you on the subway system and, you know, the power. So here's the answer that we found in Washington. You can talk about it's the right thing to do for disabled people, blah, blah, blah. It helps people on the system. They need to get here to there. It makes them feel good. It's a good thing to do, blah, blah. What it really comes down to, particularly in Washington, D.C., is money. So if I go onto the paratransit system, I know that if I take – Pat Sheehan takes a paratransit ride, it's going to cost $50 to $55. That includes the vehicle, the driver, dispatch, the scheduling, all the overhead. It's going to be $50, $55 a trip. So they have decided in Washington, D.C., something that we advocated for, something you could advocate for, is that if you let me use the fixed route system for free, which is going to be an average of, what, $4 to $6 as opposed to me do paratransit, that you're going to be saving money. Right. Yeah, and it's huge, and it does help an awful lot. I mean, I use the fixed route system all the time, and my little card lets me ride it for free. Now, the flip side on that, and I don't understand how people, maybe it's Washington, D.C., I don't know, but people now, everyone wants to be on paratransit so they can ride the fixed route system for free. So when you get a benefit, you're always going to get somebody else who's going to figure out a way to take that benefit. And so we have had to beef up our eligibility portion of who.
Washington is all about that.
All about what? Oh, yeah. It's a profession, I swear. And for them, fixed route is the way to go. I mean, it's the same in Washington. We see that all over the country. That's one of the things that we, you know, with respect to the topics and why the Transportation Committee, one of the things that we talk about, one of the things, you know, what is the experience in Boston as opposed to Washington, D.C.? What do we learn from Seattle as opposed to, you know, Ron Brooks, who is out in Arizona, who works in the industry, that kind of stuff. So we're always talking. Sometimes it feels like we're moaning about our particular situation, but we try to be able to share. We share experiences and we learn from each other. One of the things that we just started a year ago in the Washington, D.C. area that we stole from Massachusetts and Seattle was same-day service on paratransit. Once again, with paratransit becoming more and more and more popular, it was becoming more and more and more expensive, and they just hadn't budgeted for it. So from the transit property side, they wanted to get more people off of paratransit. So what they, you know, they've offered the fixed route service, and that's fine for some people. Then they offered same-day service, and so they have worked with the cab they worked with cab companies initially, and we have another RFP out there to expand it through D.C. and Virginia, and it might be Uber and Lyft. They may be some of our partners, so that if you want to take a trip that our group in Washington, D.C., you pay the first $5, and then they pick up the next $15. So if you take a trip, it's $20 maybe as opposed to $55. And are they saving money? Over the long haul, yes. It appears that the paratransit system saves money. What I like is that I get an individual cab ride for $5 to spend maybe $5 to $6 on a trip that might cost me $25 or $30. So same-day service, once again, you can talk about it in terms of, oh, that's a good thing to do for disabled people, blind people, blah, 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 blah. But for the transit property, and this is one of the things we talk about, is what's in it for them. And with them, it's all about how can we save money. Paratransit just eats up a ton of cash. Good service. It's a great service to have, and you know, it's mandated. But these other services, we see more of them coming up and more of them working together to provide a more unified system. Uber and Lyft in the Washington, D.C. area are great, you know. Yeah. I think it would. Yeah. My guess is that you're still going to be, you know, you've got your dispatch, you've got your reservationists, you've got your drivers, you've got your vehicles. Right. I think that it would. My guess is that they're probably going to look at it and try to figure that out for what works for disabled people. It's going to be a win-win, really, for us, because it gives us more flexibility about going. We can go more places cheaper. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and I told them I thought that they were piloting some.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to anticipate all the...
So we had exactly the same. And, you know, that's one of the things maybe that if you'd like, send me an email, because I can send you the RFP that we had out for, which had the requirements for same-day service. And so knowing what our requirements were and what, you know, all that sort of thing is great. That's one of the nice things that happens, particularly on a committee like the Transportation Committee, or the other committee that I'll bring up right now is Environmental Access. Both of those committees work together closely because there's so much that concerns both committees in the area of mobility. Environmental Access, and that's chaired by Becky Davidson, we talk a lot about accessibility of sidewalks, the accessibility of intersections, APSs, where do they get placed, how do they get placed, do you have to fight for APSs, accessible pedestrian signals, intersection by intersection, are you lucky enough to have what we have in Maryland, where the Federal Highway Administration indicated that an intersection is covered under the ADA as a place where you have to have equivalent information, which includes accessible pedestrian signals that say, you know, that give you the information to cross this intersection, you know, that it's safe to cross this intersection, or that you have the beeping ticking sound for the APS going forward. We've been very lucky in Maryland in that when they design an intersection, they're designing the intersection with the APSs in mind already. There are some places, like particularly in Virginia, where I know that they are very excited when they get an APS, but they have to fight intersection by intersection. The other day, I was, just when you think you've solved all the problems, we were talking in Maryland the other day, and the ADA coordinator for the city started talking about floating bus stops. I'd never heard of that before. Floating bus stops where they can move the bus stops around from area to area, that, you know, and so it's going to constrict traffic. You may have to cross an area, you know, onto a median because your bus stop has been moved from the sidewalk over to another area. It doesn't sound anything like that I want to get involved in, that I want to go look for. When we talk about, you know, the Environmental Access Committee talks about bus stops, we talk about bus shelters, making sure that you can get to a bus shelter, that you're covered out of the weather, but that the bus shelter also is a smart bus shelter and will tell you when your buses are coming. And that's kind of cool stuff. If you don't have your iPhone or you just want to use the machine in the bus terminal, all that kind of information is available. You know, when's the next bus coming? When is the next train coming? In our area for 4 or 5 years, we have been fussing with the paratransit people because we know they know where our vehicle is. And we ask for real-time information like you get with Uber and Lyft about your vehicle will arrive in 3 minutes, you know, as opposed to 30, which is what they'll, you know, tell you. And so now they're starting to put together an app which is now going to give us that real-time information. Something that we have been requesting for 5 years. But now when you look and you see that in Uber and Lyft, you know that it's possible to get that information, and now we're spoiled by it. We expect that information. We expect it to be correct. We expect to know what the vehicle is that we're getting into. So between the – and when Peter was talking – And then in the other forums that I attended this weekend, you know, you talked about things like intersection design. You talked about things like roundabouts. Those are all issues that are transportation issues. They're also environmental access issues. So environmental access has taken the subject of roundabouts and talked about how we can construct roundabouts so that they are more accessible than less accessible. I think the fight has been, we don't like roundabouts. We want to abolish them. It doesn't look like they're going away. So BZ Benson and other smart people like that have put together some standards for making roundabouts more accessible. That's where the combination of Alice Richhart, Becky Davidson as chairs of transportation and environmental access, working together really helps the whole transit picture, because if you design an accessible transportation system and you don't take into consideration that I need to have an accessible sidewalk that goes up to the bus stop so I can get onto the fixed route system, that's not going to help anybody. And so making sure that you get a complete streets, you know, with things like poles out of the middle of the sidewalk, who do I talk to get my intersection designed correctly, what are the standards for that? We've got people, particularly in the environmental access community, that live and eat and breathe accessible intersections. They know all this stuff. They memorize the manual on uniform traffic control devices. It's kind of scary to listen to them talk. So what that means to you guys is that if you've got a question, if you're looking for what is your experience in this particular area, rather than having to do the work yourself, talk to us on the transportation committee. We're very happy to share what we have done in the area of accessible bus, accessible trains, subway trains, paratransit. Those are three areas that we've worked and shared extensively. And not that we have answers for everybody, but we've gone through a certain amount of experience, and we can share that experience with you. On environmental access, we do accessible intersections, sidewalks. And I forget, there was a term that was used when you had blended sidewalks. And so you were sharing the sidewalk with cars and that sort of thing. What's that? Shared space. Thank you. Yes. Shared space. Horrible idea. Started in Europe. I guess it came to the United States. From what I've seen, shared spaces is not being looked at very very hard right now. I think that's an idea whose time has maybe come and gone. At least I hope so. One of the areas that we're seeing, though, that is tricky are bicycles on the sidewalks, scooters on the sidewalks. Yeah, a lot of concern. So are you guys seeing a lot of concern on that? Really? Uh-huh. So this is interesting. I'd love to get some feedback from you guys on this, because Becky Davidson just asked the Environmental Access Committee. I don't know if we tackled it so much on the transportation side. But what we really discovered is there's nothing nationally. It's all usually a local matter. And it isn't something that we've seen as a huge issue. So looks like we were wrong. You guys, so I'd love to get that information, because we probably need to then take that up as an agenda. What's that? It is pat.sheehan1@verizon.net. So,
I mean, the biggest problem is scooter operators.
You're right.
Breaks.
So if they can cross the crosswalk or get in traffic, they do whatever works for them.
And also, Pat, are there regulations for them to use pathways like there are for sidewalks?
Well, there are, but they're not being enforced.
Yeah. As far as ADA,
No. Right, there are no regulations for sidewalks. We need to focus more on that then, because I actually had, just anecdotally, I had someone, an engineer who was going to come to my apartment about 3 weeks ago. When I called up to make sure he was going to come, his son, who is 19 years old, and I think is just as a pedestrian, was struck and killed, and they were at his funeral. And it was... Right, and this was a sighted person. This was not even a blind person. Yeah.
And drivers of cars pay them because they're weaving in and out of traffic.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I was at a bus stop, and there was a scooter that went between two cars, made a right-hand turn in front of a car waiting at the light so it could get around. It's
crazy.
Go to Europe, because that's how they drive over there.
I think what we need to do is
Pat,
yes.
I think the term shared spaces in the Midwest is being used as complete streets.
Complete streets.
And there is federal legislation out there on that.
So if you look
under complete streets projects, and your MPOs have had workshops on them. And that is what they are forming. And some of them do have committees that do invite you to attend and work with them on making sure your communities are accessible and meeting your needs. But they do combine your rails to trails, your safe kids getting to school,
right?
As well as your scooters and your bike paths.
So my experience on the bicycle rails to trails piece, because I've done about 15 years of pedestrian safety access also, is at least in Maryland, I have not seen that kind of conflict on the rails to trails between pedestrians and bikes, because pedestrian groups sit in with some of the bike groups. But I have seen it on your regular sidewalks folks have been much more aggressive, particularly the bikes. And what's interesting is the bike folks have been asking the motor vehicle folks for deference, and then they don't provide that same to pedestrians. Right.
The bike community in Bloomington is strong, and they have the Bike and Pedestrian Commission, which I sat on, but I was the only really person that was focused on pedestrians. That is it.
Right. Yeah, same with me. Yeah. So after a while, I mean, you're getting outvoted, 20 bicyclists to one lone pedestrian. Yeah. However, there are some bicycle and pedestrian groups out there. There are some pedestrian groups out there. And that was something that we did talk about through environmental access, is getting together with the pedestrian access groups to see what, and maybe that's one way to increase our numbers and increase our leverage. So you can see that between environmental access and is this environmental access issue or is this a transportation issue? I think it's a little bit of both. The other areas that we've covered, in the transportation area, one of the areas that came up, particularly this past summer, was rail car design. There was an individual, low vision individual in Washington, D.C., who thought she was walking onto a subway car and walked in between the cars, fell onto the tracks. That has happened before. It actually happened, and this was on a committee that I chaired for 25 years, And they said they were going to get that done. They were going to get that fixed. They were going to put in between car door barriers between the trains. We actually stopped our procurement of buying new rail cars, or the transit property stopped buying the new rail cars with Kawasaki until they installed between car door barriers. They actually said they were going to take another 2 years to get it done. ACB got involved. There was a resolution passed, and our committee said we wanted it done by December. The Federal Transit Administration came back and said, we will get these cars fixed by May. So when I say thank you to you guys for the work, you guys, all the board, all the meetings you go to, discussions that you have, the areas that you know, the committees that you sit on, we have made progress, and I don't want to undercut any of that. But I guess we always have to be vigilant, and I know that we're buying more rail cars in Washington, D.C. New York is buying a set of rail cars, maybe from Kawasaki. The between car door barriers is a huge issue, so that, you know, no other people walk in between those cars, and this individual had some usable vision. So when she saw what she saw, thought was the car door opening, it was the in-between car, you know, it was in the middle of the afternoon, and she thought she was walking onto the, and she wasn't using her cane properly. But I have been very close to doing that myself, with a briefcase in my left hand, my cell phone in my right hand, and my cane under my arm. Not a great way to do it. So I decided after that, you know, no more cell phone. Okay. This has been wonderful. Thank you. Other questions?
Yes. For people who don't live in Indianapolis, they're going to put in the red line, which is going to screw up College, 38th Street, and Meridian Street. So that hits my neighborhood and it hits everything I do. How can we get the specs on how they're going to do the intersection so we can have experts look at this before they put it in, because they're starting to dig the red line now? Because it's going to make, I can think of about 8 intersections that will be made impassable to older people and people with disabilities. I'm not sure
you can. She's asking how you get the specs, I guess, how you get the.
So we can submit
design
it to your committee and try to.
So. I would. They would have to have some contingency plan about what they're going to do about those intersections, because it's going to affect everybody.
It's going to be horrible because they're bent down.
If
there's no way you're going to get across there.
Do you guys have an accessibility committee with it? Global.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Global information systems. But actually, don't you think that the responsibility for intersection design and all that, either it's with the state, with a state highway administration or the city, but the committee, who's, you know, they're building the red line.
Yeah. Rapid transit.
Is it? A huge subway? Is it?
It's like trolley cars.
Trolley, okay. So you would think that the committee would also be involved in what's going to happen with the intersection design.
I don't know. We just demand that they produce this stuff?
You can ask for it. I don't know if you'd understand the engineering specs, but my question would be to go to the committee and say, okay, what's going to happen at these intersections? If you don't get it from the committee, then whoever owns that intersection, whether it's the state highway administration or the city, they should be able to answer those questions, because they're the ones that own the intersections.
Okay, so are you
thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys. I had fun.
And thanks for coming so far away.
No, I enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me. And I'll be back next year. Okay, so thanks.